Welcome, everybody. Today is March 11th, 2021. I call this meeting of State Government Finance and Election Committee to order. And pursuant to House Rule 10.01, this meeting is being held virtually. The committee assistants will take the roll.
Chair Nelson?
I'm here.
Vice Chair Carlson?
Carlson, present.
Representative Nash?
Present.
Representative Bonner?
Present.
Representative Drazkowski? Looks like he's trying to join the meeting. Representative Elkins?
Present.
Representative Greenman?
Present.
Representative Cleborne?
Present.
Representative Kosnick?
Present.
Representative Mason?
Present.
Representative New Brindley?
Present.
Representative Pawlowski?
Pawlowski, present.
Representative Quam?
Present.
A quorum is present.
And we'll note when Representative Skowski gets on. I don't see him on my list here, but anyway, members, the next thing we have on our agenda is the approval of the minutes from last night's meeting, March 10th. Representative Elkins, did you get a chance to look at the minutes?
I have, Matt, and we'll move their approval, Mr. Chair.
Representative Elkins moves approval of the minutes for March 10th, 2021. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Minutes have been approved. Now, members, we have another big agenda here today. Hopefully, we can get through it quickly. And first bill on our agenda is House File 1439, Representative Carlson. And this is going to be laid over for possible inclusion. So, Representative Carlson, you want to move your bill?
Yes, thank you, Chair Nelson. I'd like to move House File 1439.
Representative Carlson, you want to explain your bill? And then I see you have a testifier.
Yes, thank you again, Chair Nelson. Members and Chair Nelson, the three management and budget policy bills, the three bills that I'll be presenting today all share a common theme. They all address a state program or policy that are unworkable or haven't met their intended goal. These changes should not be viewed as failures, but as an honest acknowledgement of the good faith efforts that have been made. But now is the time to move on. By doing less, these three bills before us today will save Minnesota taxpayers money, improve employee productivity by eliminating unworkable and duplicative work processes, and allow them to better serve the people of Minnesota. So specifically to House File 1439, dealing with the flexibility for higher deductible health plans, a couple quick introductory remarks before I turn it over to my testifiers. The State Employee Group Insurance Program, or CGIP, provides health and well-being benefit programs to state employees and their participating organizations. A key component of CGIP's work is managing the state's health insurance program for the state's employees and their families, and working to keep healthcare costs affordable for plan participants. Current statute mandates that MMB offer a high deductible health plan. The high deductible health plan is only offered to state employees in the commissioner's plan and managerial plan. No employees represented by collective bargaining agreements will be impacted. On average, only 2% of eligible employees select the high deductible plan for their coverage. So 2% out of about 2,900 employees are eligible for this. Offering the high deductible plan for such a limited number of participants is a strain on resources. The plan requires its own set of communications, regulated plan documents, enrollment materials, and system requirements. By giving MMB flexibility in offering this option, MMB may elect to temporarily suspend this offering. However, none of the impacted employees will lose their coverage. They will have other options presented to them. So again, this is just allowing for flexibility. It's not eliminating the plan, but allowing MMB to have the option. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to allow my testifiers a chance to speak.
And I have one testifier listed for this bill, Ms. Lorna Smith. If you want to introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chairman. My name is Lorna Smith. I'm the Executive Director of Employee Insurance at Minnesota Management and Budget.
The representative did an excellent job summarizing the bill. I'll just add a couple of points. It costs us approximately $220,000 a year to administer the high deductible health plan. That works out to about $1,700 per employee. We compare that to the cost of administering the regular Advantage plan, which is about $118 per member or per employee per year. We have streamlined it as much as possible. It's the same people administer both programs, and we do as much overlap as possible. So eliminating this program won't require us to eliminate any state employees. It will simply free them up to do higher payback work, work that will help us hopefully curb costs in other ways or perform functions that provide greater benefit to the state. We very much appreciate that flexibility. And with that, I'll stand for any questions anyone may have.
I'm waiting for questions here, Representative Carlson. This reminds me of former Representative Biskins, who used to always want to try to make the law books smaller, take words out of our law books. So you're in good stead there, Representative Carlson. Any questions of the author or the testifier? Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the author or to the representatives for the plans. So what happens to these families? And can you tell me the math on that again? Is it how many families total go into a different plan now? And what is the cost to them? And do they lose? Because a high deductible means that they're effectively choosing to pay for a lot of it out of their own pocket, correct? And that they are assuming that they're generally healthy family or individuals. So what happens to them if your bill becomes law?
Representative Carlson, or do you want Ms. Smith to take the question?
Mr. Chair, Representative Nash, just real quick. I have a few numbers in front of me, but I think Ms. Smith could expand on this more. It's approximately 230 employees that are currently taking advantage of this. So it's very costly to the state to administer to such a small group. Ms. Smith, if you have some other data you want to share, that'd be helpful.
Ms. Smith.
Thank you, Chair. As the representative said, we do about 230 employees in that plan. We would give them notice as soon as this bill would take effect. They would have at least 6 months to know that this change is coming. Those employees would be able to move to the regular Advantage program. Under state law, they also have the ability to opt out of our coverage, and they could take on other health care coverage that may be available to them, such as with their spouse or TRICARE, whatever choice they have. Members in this plan have a HSA. They would retain all the funds in the HSA. So I don't think anybody will lose anything per se.
Representative Nash, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so what happens to the premium collection? What is the difference for the potentially affected employees if they were to go to the other Advantage plan that you just described that they would have available to them?
Ms. Smith.
Thank you, Chair, Representative. The premiums are roughly the same, so they would not be paying a greater premium. The out-of-pocket costs would go down, and they would not get the contribution to their employer contribution to the HSA.
Representative Nash.
I'm good.
Representative Elkins, you had your hand up. You're muted, Representative Elkins.
Sorry, I had the same question as Representative Nash. It has been answered.
Thank you. Any other questions? If not, thank you, Representative Carlson and Ms. Smith, and we'll lay this bill over for possible inclusion. This is Representative Carlson's day on the Hill. The next bill is House File 1440, also Representative Carlson, and this is also going to be laid over for possible inclusion. So, Representative Carlson, you want to make your motion?
Thank you, Chair Nelson. I'd like to move House File 1440 for possible inclusion in a larger bill.
And members, we have If you want to describe your bill, and we have an amendment, and why don't you describe your bill, and then we'll talk about the amendment. Representative Carlson.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. Yes, if I could make some opening remarks and then allow for my testifier then to speak to before we get to the amendment, that would be my preference.
Okay, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. Okay, folks, House File 1440 is the repeal of the Employee Gain Sharing Program. So by way of a little background, in 2011, Minnesota Statute 16A.90 was amended to require MMB to create a new standalone employee award program, employee compensation program. The program was intended to provide one-time bonus compensation to state employees for efforts made to reduce the costs of operating state government. So in other words, this was a government version of a profit-sharing type program. Well, not for a lack of trying, implementation just has not been workable. And my testifier will speak to some of the reasons for that. MMB has not been able to establish a program as envisioned under Minnesota statute and has repeatedly brought this to the attention of the legislature in committee testimony, meetings, correspondence, and reports. I do commend MMB for its efforts. They do truly have tried hard over the years to implement this program, but it's simply have not been able to meet the statutory requirements. The prudent and responsible course of action at this time is to eliminate the program. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to allow for my testifier to speak before we get to the amendment.
And we have a Dory Leland. Please identify yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Nelson, members of the committee. My name is Dory Leland. I'm the Enterprise Director for Employee Classification and Compensation at MMB. As indicated, MMB has not been able to establish the program that was envisioned by Minnesota Statute 16A.90. It is unfortunate, but the state's gain-sharing program is unworkable. Without resources dedicated for a standalone profit-sharing type program envisioned by statute, MMB simply cannot meet the statutory requirement, and we believe it is best to finally eliminate it. There are three main components to the gain sharing program. First, the maximum award is 10% of the documented savings in the fiscal year in which the savings are realized, capped at $50,000. The award must be paid from the appropriation to which the savings accrued. And third, employees whose primary job function it is to identify savings or efficiencies are generally ineligible for the award. It's our perspective that this program is not configured to drive innovation or efficiency in state government and could lead to unintended consequences. Most of the work that we do in the state is collaborative. It would be difficult to identify a single person to take full credit for the development or implementation of any particular cost-saving idea. Moreover, all state agencies are already required to comply with the system of internal controls that would protect public assets to limit waste, fraud, and abuse. There is still an opportunity for employee recognition for cost savings ideas. Since 2012, the executive branch has had an employee achievement award program to foster a culture of high performance and to recognize employees for their achievements. The criteria for receiving award vary slightly by agency, but they generally include either significant workplace contributions, implementation of money savings ideas, or outstanding work outside of their normal job parameters. The gain sharing statute envisions a program that is redundant to the employee rewards program that is already in place without any additional benefit. The program is unworkable. The cost of administering this type of program we've estimated in prior fiscal notes to be approximately $1.6 million annually. Most of that cost is incurred from the multiple levels of review and vetting that would be necessary for the internal auditing process before an award of up to $50,000 could be made available to an employee. And we do not have data to prove that the savings created by the gain sharing program would offset the costs of implementation. There are also some legal and budget constraints that limit the state's ability to use gain sharing. Measuring gains is an imperfect exercise that can lead to inequitable results and open the door to unnecessary employee disputes about who is entitled to receive whatever proportionate share of any gains realized. In addition, many of our programs require funds provided by another level of government that are intended for a specific purpose. And so any plan that would change the use of those funds or retain savings for another purpose would generally require approval from whatever that fund source is, for example, from the federal government. And that same kind of constraint may apply to transfers from another fund where savings may be needed to return to the originating fund in order to comply with appropriations law. And so in conclusion, the state already provides monetary and non-monetary recognition to employees who go above and beyond. The gain sharing program cannot be implemented and has too many pitfalls. And we'd like to take this opportunity to repeal this provision and continue our work together to ensure our state employees are valued for the work they do.
Any questions of the testifier or the author? If not, we'll go to the amendment. I see Representative Nash has the DE1 amendment. Representative Nash, you want to
thank you, Mr. Amendment? Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move DE1 and would request a roll call.
Okay, a roll call has been requested. You want to explain your amendment and what it does?
Yes. First, some history. Having served on this this committee now for my seventh year, I've dealt with the gain sharing issue for a lot of years. And when we were last in the majority, we actually brought up the gain sharing. So it wasn't brought to us. We were the ones that uncovered it and brought it to light. And then Commissioner Myron Franz came to committee and told us that the gain sharing program was successful, that it was being utilized, and that projects and savings were going out. And after talking with our well-respected OLA, Jim Nobles, they did a study and found out that, in fact, MMB had not complied with the law and that they had instead created a sort of a shadow program and made it sound a lot like gain sharing and had paid things out. And I will be very honest, and Mr. Chair, I think you were in committee at that time. It got pretty heated. And, you know, Mr. Nobles eventually pointed out that the gain sharing program was a miserable failure, not for a lack of ability to quantify and measure things, but more for just the lack of effort in making it happen. So this amendment is going to effectively require that at least $1 million from the general fund gets put back after the implementation of the gain sharing program. Effectively, it's going to put money back into the fund that was paid out over these bogus savings claims. And I believe that if you read the OLA report, and it's from January of 2018, you'll see that this has always been a pretty shaky program that people who were effectively friends of management were rewarded. And if you read the report and you look at some of the supporting documentation, you'll see that this was a pretty lackluster program. And yet the claims were paid out under the flag of gain sharing. And because Representative Carlson is trying to get rid of this program now, it should be paid back into the pool that it came out of before it's said and done. So thank you, Mr. Chair, and I look forward to discussion.
Thank you. Representative Mason, do you have a question on the amendment or a question on the bill? You're muted.
Actually, sorry, it was just on that $1 million oversight or overview. That seemed like an incredible amount of money to me. So just a little bit more detail about why it costs that much would be helpful.
That's on the bill. So we'll deal with the amendment first and then we'll go back to that.
Okay.
Any questions on the amendment?
No, I believe that is a reference to the amendment. $1 million to the general fund.
Mr. Chair, that is in my amendment.
I realize that. Representative Carl and Mason, are you talking about the $1 million of the amendment or the $1 million that Ms. Leland talked about, the cost of administering the program?
Is that not the same $1 million? No?
No.
Okay, then mine would be the oversight one, so that goes back to the bill.
Okay, that's what I thought I heard. Representative Any other further questions? Representative Carlson, what do you feel about the amendment, and do you support the amendment?
No, I do not support the amendment. I really see this as punitive towards MMB. I mean, they have really tried over the years to implement, and you know, in good faith. And members, before taking this bill on, I spent quite a bit of time in talking with staff from MMB about this. Because look, we all want to make sure that state employees are properly acknowledged for their hard work and effort. And, you know, to have such an onerous program in which to just provide some gratitude for their good works, you know, it made the whole idea of celebrating success miserable. And this just goes to punish MMB for something that is a failed program that they tried diligently to improve. So members, please vote no on the amendment.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Carter Nash.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, this isn't meant to punish them for taking on some unbelievably elaborate or difficult thing. The quantification of it was find savings, measure the savings, and reward the savings. So clearly that must be very difficult to do, I guess. But, you know, there were payments made under the guise of this. And, you know, if we're going to move this on to the other side of the rainbow, when you lose a pet that crosses the rainbow, so maybe this one's going to die too, but payments were made, and it was not actually categorized, quantified, or classified under gain sharing. So when you kill a program off, it should get paid back for the specious payments that were made. And you know, Representative Carlson, I don't believe you were in the legislature when we had this fight in committee with Commissioner Franz. Maybe you were. But it was very high profile, and ultimately we got him to admit in committee that indeed that the payments that were supposed to be categorized as gain sharing weren't, but it was decremented against that fund. So I believe a payback is in order.
With that, members, I see no more questions. Ms. Sprack, can you take the roll on the amendment?
Chair Nelson?
No.
Vice Chair Carlson?
No.
Representative Nash?
Yes.
Representative Bonner?
No.
Representative Drazkowski?
Aye.
Representative Elkins?
No.
Representative Greenman?
No.
Representative Cleburne?
No.
Representative Kosnick?
Yes.
Representative Mason?
No.
Representative New Brindley?
Yes.
Representative Pulowski?
Pulowski, no.
Representative Quam?
Aye.
With a vote of 5 ayes and 8 nays, the motion does not prevail. The amendment is not adopted.
That the amendment is not adopted. Representative Carlson. Representative Mason, you want to ask your question on the bill then?
Okay, thank you. Testifier mentioned that oversight would cost $1 million. And that seems to me like an incredibly high amount. And how many people would involve to make $1 million just to do oversight?
Ms. Leland.
Representative Nelson, members of the committee, the fiscal note that was submitted some years ago explains kind of the breakdown of where all of those costs come from. The primary driver of those costs is the different levels of review that would be required. So we did some estimates about how many proposals would we likely get and how many people would need to be involved in reviewing any of those particular proposals. And so the fiscal note kind of breaks down. If we assume 1% of all 55,000 employees submit a program, it would require a review by their supervisor and by the fiscal staff at their agency and by communications and all of these other people. And so if you multiply that over whatever happens at the agency level and then at some kind of oversight committee at the executive branch level, the number of hours per year is how we came up with that estimate.
Representative Mason, follow-up.
No, thank you.
Representative Drazkowski, welcome to the committee. I see you had some troubles getting in. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I gave up on the computer. I'm on the phone today. So thank you for your indulgence. Mr. Chair, a question for the author, and that would be Representative Carlson. Is this a bill you wrote, or did the executive branch write it?
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Nelson and Representative Drazkowski. I was approached by MMB, and we had, over the course of several meetings, brought me up to speed in terms of their work in trying to implement this program. And look, you know, sometimes in government, we impose a lot on our state agencies, and we ask them to do a lot, and they deliver. This is an opportunity to look at things that we can ask them to be doing less. You know, as legislators, sometimes we need to go back and look at the programs that we have implemented and see if they're working. This one clearly is not. This is not pointing the finger and saying of a failed attempt, you know, by anybody. There's no blame here. This is just an acknowledgement of a program for all good, you know, intentions starting off just hasn't been successful. A classic example here is with, you know, as Ms. Leland said in her testimony, the examples in terms of how this is just unworkable. You look at the funding sources through grants, federal grants. These monies have are very tied to specific outcomes. There's nothing in those grants to which they can be applied for a gain sharing. So all good intentions, you know, even to the point of trying to, you know, do acrobatics around this to try to make it work. It's just time to, you know, the course of action is to acknowledge the good faith effort that has been made and move on. So Representative Drazkowski, I just wanted to kind of get that primer on the record in terms of my work, because I want you to be aware of the hard questions that I asked staff because of, you know, just understanding and wanting to know that we are properly acknowledging and appreciating our state employees.
Representative Drazkowski, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Carlson. You know, members, one of our roles as a committee is oversight. And Representative Carlson, you know, when we're seeing this over and over again, where the executive branch is writing law. And apparently here's another example where they're coming forward and saying, this is what we want to do, and we want to write this into law. And they apparently have a willing, at least part of a legislature that's willing to do what they say. Another approach would be for our committee to bring MMB before it and talk about gain sharing and actually dissect the details about the program and what's happening. I was not aware. I was around in the legislature when Representative Downey wrote this bill and we put it into law. So was Representative Nelson. I don't think he or anyone envisioned that there was going to be a shadow program developed. I don't know, Mr. Chair, how long you want to talk about this bill, but I would be interested in how in the world did the agency develop a shadow program? Where did they get the authority to do so? And what is currently going on with it? I have a great deal of curiosity about that. I'd like to ask Ms. Leland about that. I don't know, Mr. Chair, it's probably the right time to do it. Would Ms. Leland answer that question?
Oh, Ms. Leland, and then we're going to move on to our next questioner, Ms. Leland.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. I don't know exactly what shadow program you're talking about. The employee gain sharing report, the OLA report, talks about the achievement award program, which is something that was negotiated by the unions. All of the contracts come before the legislature for their ratification. And so it wasn't a shadow program. It was something that was negotiated and that the legislature was presumably aware of when they voted for those contracts.
Thank you for that. Next person I have on my list is Representative Quam. Representative Quam?
Sorry. I use a headset and staff must have muted me. I just use my headset to turn mute in and off. Anyway, I am surprised that part of the information for this hearing wasn't including the link to the OLA report. For the members that weren't around and don't remember, I can blow the dust off a few years of remembering back. And frankly, it was a very energetic discussion. And I am just surprised that we forget, you know, what we learned in committee from past sessions. And that if we're going to address the same subject, that we don't go back and review. In the report, it was stated right in the report, for several reasons, legislators should question MMB's estimate of the cost of implementing gain sharing. Representative Mason, Chair Mason, she had a question on that. And it's pretty obvious if you look at the report, you don't even have to go back to the committee hearing, that this program has been implemented in the private sector and doesn't cost money. It saves money. It also empowers the workers that are right there seeing how to do the job. And boy, why are we wasting time, effort, money doing this when we could do it so much better this other way? And that you give respect to those workers by saying, tell us what you know. You're there on the front lines doing service to the people. Tell us how to do it better, how to save money, and how to make Minnesota a better state. That respect and the savings is why we started and put forth this gain sharing plan. And if for some reason it's not implemented right, then the committee structure allows us the oversight to bring forward the commissioner and other parties and talk about it and how can we fix it. And during that actual function of the legislature, we discovered they didn't implement a gain sharing program. They implemented something else. I won't get into what maybe some people might call it, but it was not gain sharing. The legislative auditor confirmed that in detail. And the commissioner finally agreed that yes, it wasn't a true gain sharing plan. And now we're hearing that it's a boondoggle. Well, I think what I'm hearing is that MMB doesn't want to give the respect to those workers and do a true gain sharing plan. And I just ask the committee, while this is laid over for possible inclusion, read that. Just skim through it and you'll see the truth. And thank you, Mr. Chair.
That was more of a speech than a question. Representative New Brindley, you're next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would echo Representative Quam's comments. Honestly, I'm a little dumbfounded by this. It's really, it's embarrassing. This bill is embarrassing. I hope that those of you who intend to vote yes on this have at least read the OLA report. I hope that you're not voting on this without all the information. I mean, the OLA report, I mean, some of it's been quoted, right? Like, we should question that $1 million number. That doesn't make sense. It's not a reasonable number. It is reasonable. It is feasible to implement a gain sharing program as specified by the law. MMB has just chosen not to do it. This bill is an embarrassing attempt to protect the bureaucracy at the expense of the taxpayer. And I sure hope those of you who intend to vote yes on this have at least read that report. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative New Brindley. The next person on my list is Representative Claiborne, and then I have Representative Nash for his wrap up, and then we'll vote on the bill. Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And so I am a person who believes we can only spend a dollar once, and we want to do it to create the best ripple effect that we have and make sure that we're reaping the efficiencies that we need. So to that question, to that statement, I'd like to ask the question, have there been any documented cases of someone technically getting a payout or something they would have done anyway? So I'm just trying to figure out what those, you know, if we're paying someone to do their job, right? Are there other payments that they're getting out under this program? And I don't know, Vice Chair Carlson, if you want to answer that or if you would like Ms. Leland to answer that.
Representative Carlson, do you want to tackle that or do you let Ms. Leland?
Yeah, Chair Nelson, a quick comment and Representative Claiborne. I mean, you're really getting at the heart of this. I mean, the cost aside, what we're talking about is the workability of this program. This is what we're talking about. And, you know, I'll give the example again. You know, when implementing a program or a project, building a project, those dollars are taxpayer dollars or grants from other government entities. They're specified in terms of how those dollars can be spent. Even the language in the current bill is vague in terms of who would even qualify for this. People that were instrumental in terms of a project success by the current statute itself would be exempt from receiving the benefit. It pits one employee against the next. There are so many other ways to show appreciation and respect for our state employees other than this financial means of compensation. Again, there's been some twisting of what this is in terms of some of the comments made so far, but this really does get at the heart of what it is we're trying to do here. And Ms. Leland, I think if you want to just expand upon the question itself, I think that would be helpful.
Ms. Leland, do you have any more to share?
Members of the committee, I'm not sure exactly how to answer your question. We have talked a little bit about the Achievement Award program that was negotiated with our unions and that has been in place for some time. And one of the criteria for receiving an Achievement Award is for identifying cost savings programs. And so some of the goal or intent of the gain sharing statute has been met through this other more cost efficient program that was negotiated with our union partners.
Representative Claiborne, follow up.
Mr. Chair, I would just say as a mediator who does management labor mediations, oftentimes these programs, if they're not administered very, very closely, they can cause a great deal of rift between the workers and between workers and management. And sometimes in these projects, it's very difficult to tell who was the originator of the idea. And so it's not, and I'm talking about in private industry. So I just wanna make sure that we're really clear that when we're spending dollars, we're promoting good work environments for our employees, and we're making sure that we're really reaping value for the dollars that we spent. And when I heard Vice Chair Carlson talk about, you know, or grants from other agencies, all of those dollars are tax dollars, and we are charged with making sure that they're being spent to the best benefit of our state. And here we have an agency telling us this is not the best way for us to be spending our money. These are professionals that we hire to do a job, and we should listen to them when they're telling us we're not spending money wisely. Thank you.
Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, this brings back a lot of fun memories from a series, many weeks of heated committee. And, you know, every now and then I like to be, as the chair will remember, slightly irreverent to break the humor. But I was talking with, or was asking questions of then MMB Commissioner Myron Franz, and he had effectively told the committee that the gain sharing program was what they were calling the Achievement Award. And I had asked him for evidence of that and ultimately quoted from the movie Jerry Maguire and asking him to show me the money. And everybody laughed, but he couldn't. And the OLA report pretty much bears out the fact that they were playing a little bit of a game of three-card Monty on behalf of the administration and the unions, that the Achievement Award was being funded out of the gain-sharing fund. And, I will say to Representative Carlson, you said just a minute ago that this was twisting what was really going on. Well, you've just impugned the words of Mr. Nobles, because he himself, somebody who we all trust, and if you don't trust him, we should have a conversation about that, but he himself said that this was effectively, and this is now my words, this was a debacle. And I can't for the life of me think that just simply killing off a program so that you can save embarrassment for the administration and former commissioners and possibly current commissioners is the way you really want to go. Because this is a cover-up now of a failed program, failed leadership. From the OLA report, it says that the gain-sharing program outlined in state law was different in important ways from the Achievement Award. So don't prevaricate the two and say that this is a failed program, because also in that same report, in that very same report, it was pointed out by Mr. Nobles that the actions or the desires of the legislature were clearly intended to underscore the requirements to implement a gain-sharing program. And Commissioner Franz told us in committee that they were not. We passed a law before I came to the legislature, but there was a law that was passed that said you will do this. Commissioner Franz decided to completely ignore that, but take the money that was being funded into that and hand out rewards to people that worked in the department. This is, and Mr. Chair, is this being laid over or are we voting this out? I forget.
This is being laid over.
All right. Well, Mr. Chair, if this.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If this gets brought and put into your bill, I would request that when we do that bill run through day, we should have the OLA report distributed to all of our members, because there are many of my colleagues from the DFL caucus that are completely dead wrong in your assessment of the OLA's report. And I would imagine some of you have never even read it. So you're professing your undying love for the administration that screwed the taxpayer of the state of Minnesota under the guise of a gain sharing program that was in actuality something completely different. So now we're covering up for the administration and for a commissioner who's no longer the commissioner. But Mr. Chair, I would love to have a deeper dive on this, and we can call it old home week in committee when you build the bill. And if this is in it, fully expect that this is going to be a very heated topic of conversation, because we put this to bed, I thought, and the OLA report made it very clear that this was indeed a failed effort, but it wasn't failed because of the program. It was failed because of leadership. It was failed because of governors that didn't implement discipline within their own ranks of their commissioners, and lackadaisical efforts of commissioners who didn't do their job. And this is just crazy that after 3 years after the OLA report, it still hasn't been done. So again, we have a state law that both past and current commissioners have chosen to ignore. And now they've asked for Representative Carlson to be their button man and kill the thing off.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Carlson, you're going to get your wrap up.
On to closing comments, please.
Representative Carlson.
Well, Representative Carlson, I actually was making my final comments, and decorum.
I believe an apology is
whether or not you're the vice.
Representative Nash.
Representative Carlson, you didn't have the floor. I did.
Representative Carlson, can
you
wait till your turn?
My name in such a way, Representative Nash.
Representative Carlson, you go through the chair. Representative Carlson, you will have your chance for your follow up, for your closing of the bill. Let Representative Nash finish. He's got the floor.
Thank you for that, Mr. Chair, and I will now just say this is a cover up, and I don't believe that it is something that we should kill off in this manner. And when this bill comes back in the larger omnibus bill, I hope we have an even more robust conversation than this. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Carlson, Representative Nash is going to be the last questioner. Representative Dzikowski, if you got a quick question and a quick follow-up, we need to get to a vote on this.
Thank you, Mr.
We're not
Chairman.
Voting on it. We need to get finished with this down to the next bill. Representative Dzikowski, thank you, Mr. Chair.
No follow-up, just a quick question, and that would be for Ms. Leland. Could you, Ms. Leland, provide for the committee a description of the authority that MMB has been given, a legal authority they've been given to use the gain sharing money for this union negotiated program that we refer to as a shadow program?
Ms. Leland, if you could provide that to the committee at within the next week so that we can have it for our next when and if this does come up, and or the fiscal note from when this program was put in place that you were quoting, Ms. Leland.
Chair Nelson, members of the committee, there has been no funding appropriated for this program. There is no gain sharing fund. So my response is there's nothing for me to provide because no money has ever been appropriated to this program. In terms of can I provide the 2017 fiscal note that laid out how we got to the cost that it would take to implement this program? Yes, I'd be happy to provide that.
Thank you, Ms. Leland. Representative Dzikowski, follow up.
I'm on the road, Mr. Chair, so not right now. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Dzikowski. Representative Carlson, if you want to do your quick wrap up, and then we'll lay this over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will be brief. Members, the intent here was not to point out the failures of ones or this is just hopefully my intent here was to bring forth a conversation about things that government can stop doing. What is it that government is currently doing that no longer serves a purpose or is no longer meeting its intent? There are reasons why this program, with all good faith brought forward, of why this program is no longer viable. It is unworkable, as we heard very clearly in today's testimony. While I realize there was a history here that we can keep reliving history and keep beating that horse, or we can make an acknowledgement that maybe it is time to move. There is no cover-up, members. There is nothing nefarious here. It's just the good works on the part of this agency of trying to make this program work over the years. That has not proven out. With that, I appreciate your support.
With that, we'll lay this bill over for possible inclusion. The next bill on our agenda, again, it's Representative Carlson Day, is House File 1441. And Representative Carlson, again, this is for possible laying over for possible inclusion. So if you want to explain the bill, and we have one testifier, Representative Carlson.
All right, here we go. This is House File 1441. I'd like to move for possible inclusion in a larger report. Again, this is dealing with the repeal of the interagency transfer report. Statute requires an annual report from every executive branch agency for interagency agreements and intra and interagency transfers. The report, added in 2017, has proven to be onerous for state agencies to compile with no unique benefit to the legislature or evidence that the legislature has engaged with the reports. MMB has received feedback regularly from state agency chief financial officers that this report is very administratively burdensome. Each agency report can total into the hundreds of pages and require substantial staff time to compile. But more importantly, the material contained within the reports can be easily accessed by nonpartisan House, Senate, and Legislative Budget Office fiscal analysts through the state's accounting and budget systems. Before the enactment of this provision, agencies routinely provided copies of interagency agreements to the legislature upon request. And with the repeal of this report, that same work can continue. Members, this is good government measure that will reduce duplicity.
It's easy for you to say.
I know, right? Reduce access from this information. So members, again, this is reducing or eliminating duplicity in work. The information is already available. I do have a testifier with me today. Mr. Paul Moore.
Mr. Moore, if you want to state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair Nelson, and thank you, Vice Chair Carlson, for authoring this bill. My name is Paul Moore. I am Minnesota Management and Budget's Chief Financial Officer. As MNB CFO, I convene monthly meetings with other CFOs in the executive branch, and it has been a common theme during my tenure from other CFOs and that this reporting requirement has been a significant administrative burden for them since its enactment. Based on a preliminary survey that I did with other CFOs, last year's reports totaled over 4,100 pages alone among the cabinet. And this is hitting us right at a time when there has been a significant increase in the workload of our state agency finance divisions during this pandemic. As we try to manage new state and federal COVID funding streams, we respond to federal audit requirements. And we also contend with smaller workforces due to hiring and budget pressures. Repealing these reporting requirements frees up capacity for our state's finance professionals to provide higher value activities for the state. And in fact, I'll note in this last reporting, in October, this report hit us right at the same time our first quarterly report of federal coronavirus relief fund expenditures were due. Beyond just staff time, this report has proved costly to state agencies in other ways. One agency reported to me that they spent over $4,000 last year to ensure that the report would be accessible to those using a screen reader. Another agency built a specific IT tool in their system so that they could pull the data needed for this report. And then there are other funny anecdotes too. A couple agencies also reported to me that the reports were so large that it crashed their agency's Microsoft Outlook servers and they had to break up the report into several sub-reports and then email that off to the legislature. As Representative Carlson noted, most of the information contained in this report can be provided to legislative members by the nonpartisan legislative fiscal analyst and legislative budget office staff. Myself as a former executive budget officer and now as a CFO and our agency's fiscal note coordinator, I have close, really positive working relationships with those nonpartisan fiscal analysts and LBO staff. They are some of the most foremost experts of state agency financing. And those staff have access to a broad swath of viewing privileges in our accounting and budget systems that provide the information contained in these reports. And those staff would be able to provide committee members reports and information as requested. And to the extent committee members have additional questions of state agencies or would like copies of their interagency agreement reports, of course, we would be happy to provide them. So with that, I appreciate the opportunity to testify on this bill and would stand for any questions. Thank you.
Representative Nash, do you want to go last or do you want to go right now? About what other
questions? Yeah, I'll wrap it up, sir.
Okay, Representative Claiborne.
Yeah, go on to next question or I'll...
Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this question is probably best to the testifier. So we know right now we have a hiring freeze. I don't know, and I know that we have employees who've been redeployed to other areas. So that's kind of in the back of my mind. But also, I'm wondering, in listening to this 4,100 pages of reporting of information that I understand is already available to us by other means, can you give me some idea of how much staff time this actually takes? And it seems to me like this is maybe the red tape that we're always being asked to cut. So if you could just maybe walk me through that, I would appreciate it.
Mr. Moore.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair Nelson and Representative Claiborne. I did a survey of agency CFOs and asked them the estimated amount of hours it was required of them among cabinet agencies alone, which of course doesn't even capture non-cabinet agencies that are subject to this report. It was roughly 500 hours of staff time to do that reporting. Not even included in that are the several state agencies, who I neglected to mention earlier, who already need to report this information due to longstanding requirements in their own omnibus bills that require them to report this information to their committees. I didn't even include the time of those agencies to recompile all of that information and resend it out each October.
Follow up, Representative Claiborne.
Yes, Mr. Chair, and I'm just wondering, so now these reports are currently being provided to the legislature, and I know that I do a lot of reading, but I'm wondering, when you're thinking about the legislature as a whole, both the House and the Senate, can you tell me, have these reports, do you think, led to more legislators diving more deeply into the issues?
Mr. Moore.
Chair Nelson and Representative Claiborne, I also asked agency CFOs if there has been any instances since this reporting requirement was in place that legislative staff or members engage in the reports or ask them follow-up information, and they had indicated they have not received any follow-up questions or engagement from the legislature. Of course, wouldn't presume that the legislature is not reading them, but wanted to understand on the front end the value of these reports and whether there's been significant engagement between executive branch agencies and the legislature on these. And agency CFOs indicated there have not been.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's all.
Representative Bill Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am again a little dumbfounded here. First of all, to the testifier's comments, I think that those were a little dangerous and irresponsible, that there's a presumption that the legislature has not been reading them. I'm not sure why the testifier would have any expertise on what legislators are or are not reading. I would also make a point that if indeed 500 hours of staff time are going into making these reports, all that tells me is that these reports are even more necessary than we may have thought when we implemented this language to begin with. Because if it is taking 500 hours of staff time, imagine the amount of money that is being transferred between agencies with no transparency to the public. We're told all the time that we have access to this information, but as legislators, we all know how difficult it is to access that information when we really want it. As far as cutting the red tape, this is cutting transparency. This isn't cutting the red tape. Cutting the red tape is managing regulations that are getting in the way of everyday Minnesotans. This is cutting transparency. And I find it bizarre and frankly ironic in light of the other bills that we're hearing. Last night we heard a bill on improving transparency in drug pricing. Also a ultimately worthy goal. While that bill didn't do it, a worthy goal transparency is. And again, this is yet another example of just embarrassing legislation to remove transparency to protect a bureaucracy. I don't know why anyone would support this.
That was more of a quick statement. Representative Quam, and then with Representative Nash, and we're going to get to our next bill. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. And, you know, frankly, all legislators realize there's a lot of information out there. I, for one, do a lot of research on my own and spend a lot of hours trying to grab. And I spend a lot of time trying to find who to talk to, et cetera, et cetera. And I have my LA assist in some of that activity. So it comes down to, why not have the people that are tied directly into it do the, you know, they've got, they can open up their Rolodex and look up the number and talk directly to the people, get the information, and that saves, you know, me, and I would assume every other legislator looking for information, the time and effort, so it'd be a multiple effort. It would also decrease the load on the contact people at the different parts of the government. So if a dozen legislators are calling and you replace it by a person at MMB who's coordinating, whatever group is doing that, it saves many hours across the agencies. So in effect, this 500 hours probably would save thousands of hours. So I'm not disappointed it takes this amount of time, because I've done a whole lot of research and trying to dig and find information out. And so I'm happy that there's the service being provided to the legislature by pulling this stuff together. And so I hope that we do not discontinue this service to us in the legislature. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you, Representative Quam.
Chair Nelson, would I be able to briefly clarify an earlier comment?
Mr. Moore, quickly.
Thank you, Chair Nelson. To the previous comment, I want to be very clear. I do not in any way presume that the legislature does or does not read these reports. I'm sorry if that comment was not clear. It was to respond to the question if any agency CFO has received follow-up questions or engagement from the legislature, and the answer to that was no. Thank you.
Thank you with that. And Representative Quam, I was just going to say, I don't know what a Rolodex is. I don't think I'm old enough to know what that is. That must be some old ancient thing. Anyway, Representative Nash.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. So I will say this. A lot of these reports that are coming to the legislature in a proactive manner are welcomed, because if you've ever tried to ask a question from the administration, being in a party that is not aligned with the administration ideologically, you get slow played a lot. And having these reports come proactively saves time for legislators, increases transparency, increases accountability and visibility into what is going on. And if you ever want to watch, again, another great game of the shell game or three-card Monty, watch interfund transfers. Holy buckets. So getting these reports into the hands of not just legislators, but our fantastic staff, they look at these and they are another extension of the accountability that each of us that holds an election certificate brings to the overall management of the government. And, you know, we heard that this is apparently a significant burden and that it has too much time is required of various CFOs. And I got to say, I have zero sympathy for that one. We are charged with managing the money that comes from Minnesota taxpayers. And I'm looking at my wallet right now, and I'm looking at other people's wallets metaphorically, because that's where every dollar that gets spent at the state comes from, is somebody else's wallet. And to move a bill that removes the transparency and accountability, and I also heard accessibility. You know, we have, under normal committee processes, we have a longtime person that visits the legislature, Mr. Heller, And there are people who want reports to be accessible to them. So to say that we don't want to go to the extra effort of making things accessible, I find offensive. But members, this is a bill that makes the job of the administration easier, and it makes it easier to cover things up because, again, the delay and the lag in getting information as a legislator when you ask for it is mind-numbing. So I prefer to have these things come and allow legislators and staff and the public to get access to these things, because the public will ask a legislator, hey, what do you know about this certain thing? We can provide them a report that's been delivered to us proactively. So here we are, I guess this is round three on making life easier for the administration to play the shell game. So this is a bad bill. When it comes up in the omnibus bill, expect that we will be working hard to amend it out, Mr. Chair. And with that, I thank you.
That was the last questioner. That was the minority wrap up. Representative Carlson, a quick wrap up of your bill, and then we'll lay this over and move on to our next two bills. Representative Carlson.
Yes, thank you, Chair Nelson. Again, by doing less, the repeal of this particular statute will save Minnesota taxpayers money, improve employee productivity by eliminating unworkable and duplicative work processes, and allow them to better serve the people of Minnesota. Appreciate your support.
And with that, this bill is laid over. The next bill happens to be my bill. Representative Carlson, I'm going to hand you the virtual gavel. It's House File 2032.
Yes, thank you. Give me just a second here. Got to click through a couple screens. Okay, yes. Next on the agenda, we have House File 2032. Chair Nelson, would you like to move your bill?
I'd like to move House File 2032 to the Committee on Ways and Means. And members, just so you know, this is a another vehicle bill. This is will be our backup vehicle bill. That's why we're placing it in Ways and Means. So keep deadline on that. But that's this is going to be, and Ms. Weber is here to describe what the bill does. Very minor. It just brings oversight of a few other things into the LCC. So with that, I'd like to go to our testifier, Ms. Weber.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Michelle Weber, and I am the director of the Legislative Coordinating Commission. This bill just provides clarification on current practice. The LCC has oversight for, in addition to the coordination activities that we do for the Senate and the House, we also provide that service to the joint commissions, committees, offices, and any task forces that are created as joint bodies within the legislature.
Thank you, Ms. Weber. Any questions with regards to House File 2032?
Representative Nash.
Yes, gotcha. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a 26-part question on the complexities and details of this bill, if we could. No, thank you, Mr. Chair. It was just a little levity.
Okay. We can all use
No other 20-part questions? Seeing none. Chair Nelson, would you like to renew your motion to refer House File 2032 to Ways and Means?
I'll renew my motion to refer House File 2032 to the Ways and Means Committee, and just a final comment that, yeah, we can always use a little levity. We take on serious things here, and a little bit of humor here and there helps us all get through our day.
Excellent. And let's see. Ms. Spreck, would you please take the roll?
Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Nash?
Aye.
Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Drazkowski?
Aye.
Representative Elkins?
Aye.
Representative Greenman? Representative Greenman?
Aye.
Representative Cleborne?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative New Brindley?
Aye.
Representative Pulowski?
Pulowski, aye.
Representative Klom?
Aye.
The vote of 13 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails.
The motion prevails. Thank you, Ms. Spreck. And I'll turn it back over to Chair Nelson for the last bill on the agenda for today.
Thank you, members. The next bill on our agenda is House File 687, Representative Lucero. And welcome to the committee, Representative Lucero. Representative Lucero, are you there?
I am here. I'm just trying to unmute. Let me watch that from my car.
I'll give you that second so that we don't get the windy background noise. That'd be great.
Mr. Chair, as Representative Lucero is walking back to his office or his car, I would like to move House File 687 before the committee, and I'm not sure where its next stop is as he's heading back to his car.
It's being laid over for possible inclusion.
Okay, and I will I'll move it so it's possibly laid over for inclusion.
Thank you. And Representative Lucero's in a quieter place. Representative Lucero, you're going to describe what your bill does.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Coincidentally, I happen to be out on a job site today installing internet security cameras. So this bill is very appropriate to what I'm doing today. So thank you for the indulgence, Mr. Chair. And members of the committee, I'm out of breath.
A fact, I walk in and I hustle back to my car, so I apologize for being out of breath. This bill would seek to allow for campaign. Can you hear me okay?
You're fading in and out. If you can get closer to your microphone or hold the phone so that you're closer to your microphone.
How's that? Can you hear me?
That's good now, yes.
Perfect. I apologize. Sorry for the technical interruption, Mr. Chair. In recent years, we have seen examples of people in the legislature having had protests on their front lawns and other examples of unfortunate displays of protests as one example. And those of us that are in high profile positions are subject to identity theft and other means that might have a risk to our safety and security. And so what this bill seeks to do is not to have government or anybody else pay for this, but to allow for us in our campaign expenses to be able to fund security cameras or other types of devices that might assist in some of the unfortunate displays that we might have against us. And so, Mr. Chair, I do have a DE amendment.
Representative Nash, do you want to move the DE-1 amendment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll move the DE-1 amendment on behalf of Representative Lucero.
And Representative Lucero, how does the DE-1 differ from the bill? I think I read them and there's a small change, but Representative Lucero, what is the change from the original bill?
Yes, what it does is it puts some constraints. It puts a cap on how much of our campaign expenses can be allowed, which is $2,000. It defines who would be in scopes, and not only the potential candidate for office, but a few of those that are within their immediate family, like a spouse, a fiance, a grandparent, child, grandchild, sibling, et cetera, who else might be the potential target of illegal activity. And then it further defines some of the items that it could be expended on, such as security cameras, home security system, identity theft monitoring services, et cetera.
We have one testifier, Mr. Sigurdsson, is here. Mr. Sigurdsson, if you want to identify yourself for the tape and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, as you say, my name is Jeff Sigurdsson. I'm the Executive Director of the Campaign Finance Board. Actually, sir, I don't need to testify. I was just here in case there are any technical questions on the legislation.
Thank you, Mr. Sigurdsson. I see hands up, Representative Quam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I understand why they expanded the group a little bit. There are 4 Duane Quams within the county of Olmsted. And you see on the news and you hear about people that will demonstrate or go to the home, and it's a bit scary, I don't want that to affect or impact people coming forward and doing the service of running for an office and being a representative. And I don't want intimidation of representatives. We, the diversity of our thoughts, opinions, and input help the discussion, help us avoid unintended consequences. And while, you know, we can debate the amount, I think it's reasonable to try and have some protection. You know, Ring doorbell, we've all seen what those have captured. And so I just want to say I support this, and I support everyone having their own opinions, even if I will disagree with you during committee. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And Representative Quam, as I mentioned last night, there are seven, I door knocked seven Mike Nelsons 1 year in my own legislative district. I don't even want to start counting the number of Mike Nelsons in Hennepin County. Representative Claiborne, I'm assuming Representative Nash, you want to go last.
Yes, sir.
Representative Claiborne.
One, I'd like to thank Representative Lucero for bringing a bill forward that recognizes the fact that many of us have received threats this year, and that it is unnerving for us and for our families. But my question is, for some of us, it depending on where we live in the state, it's easier to raise $2,000 than for people who live in other districts in our state. And I'm wondering if this is post-election, if I'm reading this correct, it's post-election. And then is this something that should actually be an expense of the legislature, or why is it coming out of campaign money? That's my question. The threat would come as us doing our job, and I'm just wondering why you chose campaign funds.
Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Great question. So to answer the timeline, it's in a two-year cycle. So the $2,000 cap is in a two-year cycle. So it could be pre-election, post-election. The reason for campaign dollars is because this would apply for candidates as well as incumbents. And it gets into a situation where we don't want to have taxpayers paying for security services of that nature to candidates who may never actually hold public office. And so, again, the $2,000 cap can be spent at any time during a two-year cycle. And so why campaign dollars? Because a person can do it personally right now. A person who runs for office could spend however many tens of thousands of dollars they might want out of their own pocket. But this just allows for a recognition that there are threats to those who choose to throw their hat in the ring for public office, whether they get elected or not. And it allows for a small ability to pay for that or reimburse for those expenses, again, from our campaign funds.
And Mr. Chair, I would just say again,
Representative Claiborne, follow up.
Yeah, I would just say again, I do appreciate this bill, Representative Lucero, but my concern is that not all districts can raise money equally. And so I think we need to think about how we ensure safety and security for candidates and legislators in maybe a broader way. But thank you again, Representative Lucero.
Representative Bonner, I see you have your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I've, even last cycle, I've struggled with this one a little bit. You know, I understand and appreciate the intent for sure. And I can tell you that I've been receiving from time to time anonymous mail at my home, threatening mail that despite my best efforts to scrub my address, I've received memes of folks threatening to shoot me and telling me that they're coming for me. And I do worry about my family when I am not here or if they're alone. I do worry about that. So I certainly appreciate that. And I'm grateful, Representative Lucero, for the intention also to put a cap in place in this. But the place where I still struggle is whether or not this is an appropriate place or vehicle to fund this. I'm not sure. I'm literally not playing a game here. I really don't know the answer, but I guess I think we probably should continue to have more discussion on if this is the right place or the right way to do this. I think Representative Cleburne kind of alluded to it as well. Is there a better way to really look at how we ensure the safety and security of our legislators, to make sure that their families who, you know, maybe didn't sign up for this are protected. So I appreciate the bill. Not sure if I'm 100% on board yet, but certainly appreciate the intent.
Thank you, Representative Bonner. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I appreciate that, Representative Bonner. And right now, if you look at the DE amendment, each of us can see that presently, the purpose of our campaigns is obviously to get a candidate elected. But that being the primary purpose, present law, there are 27 items right now that at campaign dollars can be used that are outside of the purpose of getting a candidate elected. I'm just reading a handful of them here. To make payments for funeral gifts and memorials, right? That has nothing to do with getting elected, but we're allowed to do that. To pay for childcare costs, to pay for a post-election party, things like that. So there's a number of things that we can do, like a laptop, right? We can purchase a laptop with campaign funds. So this simply seeks to recognize item number 28 that we can do to pay or use our campaign funds for. Because like those other items, like a laptop, for example, like reimbursement for mileage, these are things that we incur as candidates, and we don't have to do them. So even if this were to pass into law and be permitted as an allowable campaign expense, it's not something we have to do if we choose not to.
Next person on my list is Representative Kosnick. And then we'll go, and after you, Representative Kosnick, we'll go to Representative Nash, and then we'll proceed with getting this laid over. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Lucero. Welcome to the committee. This is an interesting topic, an issue that you're trying to address, so thank you for bringing it forward. I was wondering if Mr. Sigurdsson from the Campaign Finance Board could talk about, or maybe the author, what are the parameters of these expenses, and is there any issues with that, or is that kind of go like the rest of the campaign expenses in terms of guidelines and discrepancy on what's considered? My concern would be, like, what if you hire a $2,000 a security person, and he happens, or she would happen to be dropping literature for you and door knocking for you at the same time? Is there any concerns or conflicts with that?
Mr. Sigurdsson.
Chair Nelson, Representative, I think that as long as it was related to the security, it would be mixing two different types of activities. If the primary purpose of the activity was campaign related, then I think it would still be a campaign expenditure. This is limited to the domicile of the candidate and to their immediate family members. I don't believe it would be extended to door knockers under the current language.
Representative Kosnick, follow up.
Thank you for that clarification. Thank you, Representative Lucero.
Thank you.
Representative Nash, your follow up.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'm not sure how many followed some of the goings on of the last number of months, but there have been protests outside of members' houses, both sides of the aisle, and I condemn them all. In the past, Representative McDaniel had protesters outside of his home. Recently, Representative Mariani had some. Representative Hansen has had some. Representative O'Neill has had a person, because of her serving in office, has been terrorizing her. And I will share with you that I myself have had people send me emails and notes and others saying that they didn't like my perspective on certain things and that they intended to come and protest outside my house and burn my house. So I alerted my county sheriff and talked with the sergeant at arms. And members, here's the deal. We all try to do our very best, and we all have some ideological differences, but none of us should have to go through having people come to your home to terrorize you. And if we are able to minimize that by utilizing campaign funds to pay for both candidates and then successful candidates who become members, I think that that is not a bad expenditure. And, you know, a Ring doorbell, one of our colleagues has been very helpful in helping others install Ring doorbells. Representative Novotny has been just fantastic in helping keep his other colleagues safe. I myself have been helpful for some other folks on these things. Your personal safety is of great importance to me, and we don't have to agree on anything, but I will expend great energy to keep you safe. And I think that this is a small thing that we can ask to pass into law to make sure that we have the ability to keep not just members safe, but their families safe through some fairly pedestrian things by today's accounts of perhaps a Ring doorbell or an alarm system or cameras or other things. And I think Representative Lucero has a really good bill here, and it is something that is not a partisan issue. It is a common sense issue. Because we serve in office, because we serve as a high profile individual, there will be people who dislike you. And again, I condemn all of that behavior. But as I understand it, and here's a question for Mr. Sigurdsson, would this be something that could be categorized under the cost of being in office as a campaign expense, Mr. Chair?
Are you asking me?
I was asking if we could ask Mr. Sigurdsson that question.
Oh, yes. Okay. Mr. Sigurdsson.
Chair Nelson, Representative Nash. No, I don't believe so. The board did look at that question back in 2018 and concluded that it was too far removed from the cost of serving in office. Security concerns were too far removed from the cost of serving in office as they understood that term to be included under that category, and suggested to the requester that it would be more appropriate to have the legislature add that as a specific category, non-campaign disbursements, so that there would be clear direction to the board.
Thank you, Mr. Sigurdsson. And thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll conclude by renewing my motion to consider House File 687 to be laid over for possible inclusion.
And with that, the bill is laid over. And Representative Lucero, before you go, I just want to say I giggle every time I see an IT person that has trouble with their IT. So you give me a little bit of a giggle in the morning. The other thing I'd like to say is if I'd had security cameras up back before I ran for office, but the last year my predecessor ran for office, that I might have caught the people that dumped and put up 50 lawn signs for her that in my backyard or my side yard, and then dumped another number of signs on the ground and the rebar for them. That year she'd had a bunch of people stealing her signs all the session long. And I went out that morning after the Friday morning after the election as I was heading out, and these 50 signs were all set up in my side yard. So I might have caught who did that. With that, members, this bill.
Mr. Chair,
Mr. Chair, we did not adopt.
Oh, you're right. Representative, the DE1 amendment that we've been talking about. All in favor of the DE1 amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Thank you. And with that.
So then, Mr. Chair, I would renew my motion for House File 687 as amended to be laid over for possible inclusion.
And that we're going to do is laid over for possible inclusion.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate it. I'm going to get back to installing some internet security cameras.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot.
Members, our next meeting is tomorrow, and we have a packed agenda. There's another bill that was referred to us. I don't know if we're going to get it. It was referred to us from the Labor and Veterans Committee last night. So we'll see what happens with that. But members, with that, we are adjourned.